Afternoon. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise, and we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. So glad you tuned in, and a very happy Monday to you. Well, my guest today feels that the idea of being busy has gotten a bad rap. Is all busy bad? Or maybe there's a better way to do busy. Well, my guest today is my friend Glynis Whitwer, and she joins me to talk about her new book, Doing Busy Better, Enjoying God's Gifts of Work and Rest. And I think that's a paradigm shift, don't you? To look at work and rest, both as God's gifts, and that there is a better way to do busy. We've got three copies of Glynis's book to hand out today. Again, we're not taking calls. I want to give Glynis as much time as possible. So you know the drill. If you listen often enough, just email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com, and don't forget that mailing address. If you've got a question throughout the conversation, my conversation with Glynis, just include that in that email. A couple quick announcements before we hear from Glynis. We've got an amazing Faith Radio app, and maybe you've heard about it, but you've not downloaded it yet. It's free. You can go to Apple App Store or Google Play, download our Faith Radio app so you can live stream from anywhere or even catch our podcasts after the fact. Again, Apple App Store, Google Play. Also, we're on iTunes. Our shows are automatically uploaded to iTunes. That's another way you can listen to the shows after the fact if the live show's time just doesn't work for you. Also, here at Faith Radio, we are making a commitment to help you choose joy. And in fact, we're offering Kay Warren's Choose Joy devotional, two copies every week of this month. And the month is almost up. But if you want to sign up to win, go to myfaithradio.com. You can sign up to win for free. And I do hope you win. Let me tell you about my guest. We'll get her on the show. Glynis Whitwer is Executive Director of Communications for Proverbs 31 Ministries. She's a regular contributor to Encouragement for Today. The P31 email devotional reaches over 1 million women per day. Is that amazing? Glynis and her husband Todd and their five young adult children live in Arizona. We're glad to have her back on the show with us today. Glynis, welcome back.
Hi, Susie. Thank you so much.
Good to have you. So you know, because you've been on before, that we love to start out by talking scripture. And you chose 1 Corinthians 4:2. Now it is required that those who've been given a trust must prove faithful. Talk about that passage.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I think the Lord gave me one of my largest strengths is responsibility. Hmm. And I feel often just such the weight of being entrusted with what the Lord has given me, whether that's relationships, my home, or a message. And so I think I just want to live my life in a faithful way and to be obedient. And so, and I do consider that what the Lord has given me is a trust, and he's always watching how well, and I'm asking, how well am I doing with this all the time? And checking to make sure that I'm doing things in alignment with his will.
Mm. So it sounds like you may have taken the strength finder. I did as well. And my top one was responsibility as well. Don't you feel like, you know, because we are maybe hyper responsible and we stretch our arms out and you just want to make sure you're coming through for everybody's counting on you, that sometimes can work against us as far as grace and imperfection and mercy and all those things.
So much.
Yeah.
So much. And my second strength is achiever.
Mine too.
So
Oh my goodness.
So, you know, they, mm-hmm. at Proverbs 31, we have different names for that combo, but there's a few of us that have those two at the top, and it is relentless. Mm-hmm. And it's part of, you know, what I talk about in the book. I mean, having those two, I don't really talk so much about the achiever part, but the responsibility, it's hard to know what's your responsibility and what's not, because everything feels like it's your responsibility. Mm-hmm. So it's just this constant internal drive to get things done.
Yeah, and if you are a responsible person, even things that aren't your responsibility, you'll spot them maybe before others do. And if you can jump in and fill that gap, it'll keep something from falling, slipping through the cracks. But that's not always our responsibility.
No, I know, but still, I it's true. I mm-hmm. always say, you know, the this responsibility is not the fun one to invite to the party.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to be the one that sees every potential danger before it happens.
Mm-hmm,
so,
mm-hmm.
It's exhausting.
It is. It really is. Well, talk about, if you would, the ripple effect of doing busy the wrong way. What does that look like?
Well, I think it can look different for most of us, but for most of us, it takes us down this path of exhaustion and maybe resentment and just feeling scattered and hard to bring your thoughts in line and hard to manage things and honestly feeling a little bit like a victim or a slave to your schedule or the expectations of other people. And so it really does become a pathway that it's hard to figure out how to get out of or how to stop or how to reverse. And yet it's possible. Mm-hmm. There is hope.
Mm-hmm. Just for the sake of conversation, would you say there's an opposite problem here too? So on one hand, there may be a tendency for some to do too much consistently so that they're just constantly on the rumble strips. And on the other side, there may be people who are so afraid of that or just need so much downtime that they maybe tend towards selfishness and self-protection to a fault where they're maybe missing out on some of the things God invites them to.
Well, that is true. I think that there's a lot of fear that just actually becomes so ingrained in us that it's hard to identify. And so whether it's there's fear that's holding you back or whether it's it just not really believing that you have the potential. I know I have a son who gives up too easily. If he doesn't succeed, he just feels it's an automatic, I can't do this. And so I think there's a lot of different reasons why people maybe don't step out, why they don't risk. Of course, for those of us who do, it's always easy to look and think people ought to be doing something. I also have a friend who one time taught me that some people she called it wired tired. And I realized, you know, not everybody has the same high level of activity or really, I mean, just the ability to sustain as much as I do. And it sounds like I think you too, Susie. And I know that's one thing when I wrote this book, I realized, you know what, I'm not writing this book for everybody. There are some people who this is not a problem with.
Right.
You know, for whatever reason, they're not in this this cycle of overwork, exhaustion, swearing, I'll never do that again. And then, yeah, we do. Because, some of us are wired, not tired. You know, we're wired for go.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that might be just because for all of us, there's probably a shadow side of our strength. And so for that person maybe who's wired tired and maybe their capacity just isn't there, then obedience would sometimes call them out of their self-protection. And for those who are wired for a lot of capacity, obedience would be to dare to say no, to let certain things go when God is saying that one's not yours to do. If you don't mind, Glynis, I would love for you to take us back to a time in your life where when you weren't doing busy better and you were realizing this is not sustainable. Tell us about that time and even how you got there.
Well, I would say there's multiple times in my life because it's been a process of different circumstances that have prompted me to this place. And when I go back, probably the hardest time of my life was when we had our three children. By that point, my husband and I had been married for 8 years. So we weren't, we had a 5-year plan that turned into an 8-year plan with some infertility issues. And so I had 8 years to really establish myself as a professional, as a lead volunteer at my church. And I remember thinking, I am not going to be that mother who changes my lifestyle for my children. Mm-hmm. And so I had friends about that time who were having kids, and they would they'd go home straight after church instead of having lunch because their child needed a nap. Now, at that point, I was pretty judgmental. Now, at this point, they were the wisest. That was the wisest thing to do. So I just had this internal declaration that I was going to be the one who could continue to manage this. And that meant work, and that meant volunteer opportunities. And for a few years, I just about destroyed my sanity. And in fact, my brother-in-law once said he thought I was losing my mind, and he was probably right because I had these three little boys, and when my third one was born, my oldest one was still three, if you can believe it. And everything kind of stopped when my youngest was born because he refused to take a bottle for 10 months. So I had an enforced little season there, and then as soon as that was over, I was like, I'm getting back. So I really was nuts. I was nuts. I said yes to too many things. I said yes to co-lead Vacation Bible School the week after my third son was due. And I can still now picture myself, Susie, standing at the front of that church filled with a couple hundred children leading them in music and somebody walking my screaming baby outside so that I could do it. And so that was just a little snapshot of really was there was and there were some reasons, and I we can get to that if you want to get there, but I didn't see it at that point. It all seemed good to me, and but I was in a really bad place.
And we've got probably just a few minutes before this first break, Glynis. I would love to know when the light bulb went on, or what was the catalyst to kind of, I got to make some adjustments here.
So that was the first time. Right after that, Robbie was three. So my husband, his company closed their office, and we made a move across country, which I didn't want to make. And I was going to go for 2 years and then get my life back. That's what I thought. And when I got there, I was just devastated by low self-esteem. And I realized I had put all my identity in what I was doing. And so there was this constant pursuit because my projects always ended. My volunteer season always ended. So I always had to be looking for something new to prove myself. And it was, I was a book that I read that said being versus doing. This author talked about always being concerned with what she was doing, and that was me. So the Lord used that move to just reverse me, just turn my life upside down and show me that I was pursuing the wrong things.
Boy, that's good. Often I say at conferences when I'm speaking, ask women to repeat after me, I'm not who I was, I'm not what I do, I'm someone he enjoys. Because I just think it starts and ends with knowing that we are the object of God's affection. We've got nothing to prove, all of eternity to live for. And when we come from that place, boy, things change. But I, like Glynis, wired very much the same. And you have to kind of go to those hard places before it gets into your DNA. When we come back, I want Glynis to just talk about just steps to doing busy better. Maybe you need to hear that. And if you would like a copy of the book, email it to get in on the drawing, Susie@myfaithradio.com. Don't forget the mailing address, and we will be back in a minute. Great song for today's topic. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Susie Larson. This is Of the Promise, talking to my friend Glynis Whitwer. She wrote the book, Doing Busy Better, Enjoying God's Gifts of Work and Rest. And as you were saying, Glynis, before the break, that this book is really for the person who probably is a high producer and someone who commits to more than they should sometimes, which, you know, of course, we're all in that camp. Not we're all, but you and I are in that camp. There's a number of us listening today in that camp. Before the break, you were talking about a time when you were hitting a place where you realized this is not sustainable. What kind of changes did you suddenly make when you realized, okay, this, I got to do something different here?
Well, one of the things that I did was I started looking internally into my heart. So this idea of who was I becoming, who am I being, was something I had neglected. And so this is something that I've learned, and it's a process. It's been that was years ago, and I feel like I'm still learning. Why do I do the things I do? Why do I consistently overcommit? Well, I'll say I don't do that now, why did I for so many years consistently overcommit? And so I had to really start evaluating what was going on in my heart, because it was so easy to serve the Lord. I love to serve Him. I love Him. I love to study about Him. But I had to deal with some faith issues, and what did I really believe? What did I believe about myself, and what did I believe about Him? And that has been probably one of the biggest, hardest processes of my life as a woman of faith, to have to really uncover all these areas where I didn't really have a strong faith. It's very easy to have an academic faith, but to have a faith that actually really changes you, that was something I had to learn over years.
Boy. Well, how does a person know if they're actually addicted to busyness? Because sometimes we do wear that thing like a badge. I'm so busy, got so much to do. And, I feel like the busyness keeps us in the shallows, as you said. There's no way we can go to the depths of things with God. There's no way we can have time for introspection in the shallows, and we're just kind of sprinting through, you know, several inches of water. And that is what it looks like. But from the outside looking in, it can look like we're off to doing so many important things. So, but how does a person know, especially if those are good things, lots of church things and neighborhood things, how do they know if they're addicted to busy?
Well, gosh, there's a lot of different emotions you feel. I know some of the things that I used to feel a lot, of course, is guilt. Guilt that I was working too much, but guilt when I was resting. So guilt was just a common companion for me. And then I felt a lot of resentment. I can remember one time driving my kids to the dentist and feeling resentful at the dentist because my kids needed their teeth cleaned. and so just kind of weird, just feeling like this other people are against you and you just can't get things done. And so do you hurry? And that was one thing, it was a huge eye-opener when I read John Ortberg's book, The Life You Always Wanted. He had this chapter on hurry sickness. And he said one of the, I'm not sure what symptoms, I think that was the word he used, of hurry sickness is a diminished capacity to love. So you said it too as you were setting this question up. If you just don't have the time to love people well. And people will know it when you're in a hurry or when your mind's on something else. And so, and then just blaming a lot, like it's their fault. They would get things together. I wouldn't be rushing. I wouldn't be late. I wouldn't be feeling so overwhelmed. So just a lot of those real, negative emotions.
When you think about that, when you're booked so tight, you're expecting everybody to do what they need to do because you've got a very tight schedule. You know what I'm saying? Where you think about
nothing. Yes.
Yeah.
Nothing should go wrong.
Exactly. And one of the things you wrote in the book is that hurry is a heart condition. Say more about that. And a person maybe who's hurrying and in that place of constant fight flight, how can they get to that place in their heart and maybe have a turnaround, have an awakening of their heart so that they can deal with that thing?
Well, I remember a good friend one time said to me, "I hate to bother you. I know you're so busy." And I remember that just that little statement made me think, okay, two things. One, who else doesn't want to approach me? Number two, what am I saying or doing that's giving off this impression that I don't have time for my friends? Mm. And so I had to start thinking, and I realized that I walk fast. I talk fast. I schedule so much that I don't have time to didn't have time to think things through. And so this sounds so silly, but I remember making an effort to do things slower. If my family stopped, my children, my husband talked to me, to stop what I was doing and look at them when they talk, not just continue doing it and talk while I'm not engaged. So I made some very practical decisions that I was just not going to hurry. And of course, if you're running late, there's this whole other issue of having to back things up to figure out how do you get ready without having to run late. So there are some very practical things, but then that sense of urgency, I had to really deal with it. And I realized I walked into every situation with this attitude of who's going to get in my way to stop this mission. I had to change how I think. I had to put people before my projects.
Wow.
I had to put God before my goals. So there were some things that really shifted in me that helped me think, gosh, I really do think more about this, getting this done, than how somebody feels. And so it was an awareness, and I realized, it's time to make some changes. That's not who I want to be.
That's fantastic. People before projects, God before goals. You know, I move fast, I walk fast, I talk fast, all of those things as well. And I knew it was time to take a look at that when my dentist said, "You brush your teeth really fast, don't you?" And I'm like, "Yes, and really hard too. Why?" And she's like, "Because you're brushing the enamel off your teeth." I'm like, "There's a problem here." I couldn't believe it. I just was like, here I thought I was being so diligent, and I was actually doing more harm than good. And there's times we think we're being diligent, and we are doing more harm than good, aren't we?
Yeah, it really is. I think some of us can leave casualties in our wake without ever meaning to.
Mm, boy, I want to know, you started to just have a heart change, and I think that's huge. People before projects, God before goals. When you started to do that, what did you see change on the outside? So you just start to just prioritize things differently internally. How did that shift how you showed up in these different roles that you play, Glynis?
Well, one thing that I did, this is another practical thing, and it had to do with the heart, because I one day I just about thought I was going to have a panic attack, and So my heart was shifting, but my outside wasn't changing as much because I didn't know how to change it. I felt like such a victim. So I did this, just an inventory. I put together it was pages at that time, pages of an inventory of everything I had to do. And it was little things like make a phone call, run this errand, to plan this project. It was things that I had to do that day, that week, the next week, the next month. And I put it all in one place. I got this idea from David Allen's Getting Things Done, because, of course, that's a book a woman like me would buy. Because I think the answer is, how am I going to get more done? That's the solution. But that, what that did for me was gave me a reality check. Like, there's no way one person can do all that I'm thinking I can do. So I had my heart changing on the inside, still feeling like this victim, and realized I had to edit my life. And so it was a year while I stepped out of things honorably and didn't say yes to new things, and got my life to a manageable condition. And so it really had to be this, both these things happening at the same time, for me to really see some changes on the outside that were really sustainable going forward.
Boy, that's such a wise, wonderful thing to say, Glynis, because it takes us a while to get wound as tight as we can be. It does take a while to unwind that and to start to just change our complete approach to life. And I like that you said that you backed out of some things and kind of created some space as well. What happened as far as how did your family and your colleagues respond as they started to see just sort of a new you?
Well, I think my family probably noticed it the most, because by that point I wasn't working full time and I was working part time remotely. I had moved to Charlotte, which is where I got connected with Proverbs 31 Ministries, and we stayed there for 2 years, and then we moved back to Phoenix. So I live in Glendale right now. At that point, I was actually in Phoenix, just two little cities side by side. And so I was really pretty isolated from any coworkers at that point. So the real effect was for my children and my husband. And they got to see a mother who was much more engaged than she had been. Mm. And so also at that time, we had adopted two girls from Africa. And so there was a lot going on. You know, at any interview, it can sound pretty simple, and yet it was very complicated. So while all this was going on, we were also uncovering some pretty high-level needs in our daughters. And there were some things that the Lord was revealing, that we had an enemy who's trying to keep hidden. And if I hadn't known what I was learning, it really could have been a worse train wreck than it just was. It was just a really hard reality. But I made really hard decisions that I don't know that I could have made 10 years before. I remember thinking the Lord is giving me that time back.
Wow.
To make better choices.
I'm going to pause here. We have a hard break coming up, but I'm just riveted by the story. I'm going to have you pick it up on the other side. Talking to Glynis Whitwer. We'll be back in a minute. You know what? He leads us beside still waters, and he restores our soul. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Susie Larson. This is The Promise. Talking to Glynis Whitwer. She's got a great book titled Doing Busy Better, Enjoying God's Gifts of Work and Rest. And she says it's too easy for a hurried pace to set the pattern for our days, leaving a trail of rushed relationships and shallow thoughts. And then you further write, only the enemy wants us to find our identity in what we do, because he knows when the light's dim and the success is gone, so is our value. At this point before the break, Glynis, you were telling us about how God was just giving you a heart change, a complete heart change, where people needed to come before projects and God before goals. And it took you a while to make this shift where you just put the right things in their right place. At that same time, some things with your two adopted daughters were surfacing. And you can just see how God was working out this heart shift for you, but really setting you up so you could engage with this next challenge before you. Say more if you would.
Well, when we adopted the girls, we knew it was not going to be easy. We weren't naive. They came from Liberia, Africa. And so we knew we were going to have it was going to be a high and very complicated calling to adopt these sweet girls. And so we did, and of course it immediately changed our lives. But what happened as they got older, and really when they hit puberty, is one of them, a lot of damage and trauma came to the surface. And so I was trying to speak at that time of my life because I was an author, and, you know, Susie, you know you're an author as well, that there's an expectation that an author will be out speaking. And so every time I would go somewhere, there would be meltdowns, like I just really bad meltdowns within the family. And I realized my husband just can't manage these five kids alone. Plus the girls, they need their mother there all the time. So I made a decision to stop speaking. And I truly thought it was going to be the end of my writing career because I thought I can't do this. So when I made that decision, I knew that it could be the end of what I loved, and I didn't know how I was going to keep writing. And so it was amazing that that was about that time that more and more things started happening, and you're being able to do things online and have more of a ministry presence online. And then Proverbs 31 opened up a few things that I could do more from home, and my job there expanded. And so it was the start of me becoming where I was just a newsletter editor there, to becoming the executive director I am now. So if I hadn't said no to one thing, I couldn't have been prepared for the yes that I needed to give for the next thing. And so it was just really, I see it all as if I hadn't been prepared, I would have continued to push through and thought, I can do this, I will speak, and we'll just figure this out and solve this another way. And that wouldn't have been the best thing for my family. So it was the right thing what I did.
It's just beautiful. It goes back to, you know, the people before problems, God before goals. I mean, you were living it out, saying, I really can't see the other side of this, but what I know right here is to put my family first and trust God ultimately. And there's so much, Glynis, that we cannot see. We all think, well, I should say we often think that what's in front of us is all there is. But there are doors and windows and opportunities that we cannot even fathom. And as long as we want to control things, we miss. And I love that you just, that was blind faith to say, all I know is I got to tend to my family and I'm going to trust my dreams to him. And you wrote this too, when we feel that our safety, security, and significance depends on us, we will not know when to stop working. But somehow you knew that it didn't depend on you, and God did what he did. Absolutely amazing. When is it okay to quit? Talk to that person who's like, I'm in over my head. I'm overcommitted. Some of these things God asked me to do, some not so much. What do they do? How do you know when it's time to quit?
Yeah, I think that Scripture gives us some strong backing for that. And even Jesus, when he talked about if something causes you to sin, cut it out. You know, he was using some hyperbole when he talked about removing your eye, but he was really being clear in that if you're in a situation that's causing you to sin, that you get yourself out of it. So for me, as some of the things I've looked at in my past, I remember one time I was actually on staff at my church as a children's ministry director. It was a very small job at a small church, and I held it for about a year. And I knew that my heart was in the wrong place. This is actually, I even look back now and I think, wow, that was the old me that even knew this. The crazy me even knew this. But my heart was in such a bad place that I was so resentful towards the volunteers because they would just call in with what I thought were the flimsiest conditions, you know, or excuses. Like they had a headache. Well, I might have had a headache too, but I was there. So I just think one time, if we're in a place where we've really tried to deal with something, but we're still either highly tempted or our heart's in the wrong place or we're just sinning, I mean, that seems obvious, get out of there. The harder one is when we're in something that we're really not called to do. And I think a lot of us, we hold on to our assignments from the last season because it's the same thing you were saying. We don't know what's coming up. And sometimes the Lord makes it clear. And we don't know when it's clear. I mean, either our love for it stops or there's signs that it's time to stop, but we don't stop. We hold on. And that keeps us from being ready for the next thing. And so that's a little harder, more asking the Lord, listening for his answer, expecting him to answer, and then making the hard choice to end in one responsibility, in one job, even sometimes relationships, and move on.
Boy, that's such a good word. One of your conditions of unhealthy busyness is to be busy without boundaries. So what does it look like, especially if someone's prone towards committing to a lot, saying yes to a lot? What do the boundaries look like?
Well, I think this is one of the reasons that, as you said at the very beginning, that busy gets a bad rap, because we don't stop being busy often enough. I don't think there's anything unbiblical about working hard, being productive. In fact, we're even told, you know, in Titus 2, for the older woman to teach the younger ones to be busy at home. And so I think that we have this biblical mandate to be productive. Even we just see, even in the first believers, they were just like, the ones who weren't pulling their weight were causing problems. Mm. And so the problem is for us is that we have this seamless life where we move from work to home to sports to church, and there's no downtime in between. So what happened was, one of the things that I did was I just did not know how to honor the Sabbath. I just knew in the back of my mind, it's obvious it's one of the Ten Commandments, but I didn't know how to do it. And I honestly didn't think that it was possible. I thought, there's no possible way I can honor the Sabbath. So that wasn't even on my radar. But there, it was, we didn't even try to honor the Sabbath. Or you might not have set these, you don't set these boundaries in places that are non-negotiable. And so when you have no non-negotiable boundaries, then you're willing to sacrifice anything to get more done. Mm-hmm. So that's why I think just set these boundaries in place. And the Lord also changed my life and my heart by learning how to honor the Sabbath. Make that one of the boundaries, that you just don't work on the Sabbath, and put some other things in place that unless there's an emergency, you are not going to give up, and identify what those are.
I want you to say that again. When you have no non-negotiable boundaries, then you'll sacrifice anything to get things done. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. I think we need to let that one in. You've got a chapter titled The Undercurrent of Unease. Say more about that, if you would.
Well, this is, my guess is that there are people right now hearing that know exactly what that is. And that's that feeling, it's almost like it's a motor running inside you, that you have to get more done. It might make it hard for you to concentrate in a conversation or to sit and listen to a sermon without making your to-do list and your shopping list for after church. Mm. And that's where I just felt that guilt all the time, that I just needed to be doing something. And so it allows you to, or it disallows you to rest, because you feel you have to earn it, and you never feel that you've earned it. So it's a constant going. It pushes you to constantly go.
How does a person, I'm going to read this excerpt, I read it before too. Only the enemy wants us to find our identity in what we do, because he knows that when the lights dim and the quote unquote success is gone, then so is our value. I'm thinking of that person listening today, Glenda's going, I do not know how to detach from my value from what I do. I don't know how to separate those things. What say you?
Yeah. Well, and I think there's another thing I put in there, that this was such an aha moment for me, that only Satan draws a line from our work to our worth. Hmm. And that is not a line God draws. And I didn't know that. So my identity was solely attached to how well I did something, whether it was work, whether it was a pulling off a women's event, whether it was a children's ministry event, whatever, how well I even led my children that day, or how well I loved my husband. So if that didn't do well, then I didn't feel good about myself. So what I needed to learn was something that we didn't talk about back then. I don't ever remember anyone telling me that my identity was found in being a child of God and nothing else. And that's the only thing that I need to hold on to. And the reason that's so powerful, Susie, is that that doesn't change.
Mm-hmm.
So when we attach what we believe to something that changes, we're always going to have insecurity in that area, no matter what it is, whether it's our safety, whether it's our future potential, whether it's our identity. If we attach what we believe to something that could shift, that could change, that could end, then we'll always feel insecure in that area. So when we, and the converse is true, when we attach what we believe to God, who will never change, then we develop this sense of confidence, and it leads us to this idea of soul rest. And that is such a core part of my book, because it is such a, it's, I think it's what we desperately need. But we will, if we are a child of God, then that just doesn't change. And how he, and he's a good God, a faithful God. He's a God who's involved in our life, who does what he says he's going to do, who never deceives. And so it's just, it's a beautiful identity to have when we understand it and we accept it.
Boy, that's so good. Another unhealthy boundary around busyness, or another condition, I should say, of unhealthy busyness is being a busybody. How would you define a busybody? I think we probably have a general understanding of what a busybody is, but let's talk about that. Do a deeper dive.
This I love because this is actually in Scripture. So 2 Thessalonians 3:11 says, "We hear that some among you are idle and disruptive. They are not busy. They are busybodies." And I, when I discovered that, I was like, that is awesome. But what's a busybody? Well, a busybody is someone who's busy, but they're busy with things that really don't concern them. So that could be too much time on social media. For someone like me, I can become a busybody. I'm not a big social media person, so I don't get too involved in that. But where I do get in outside of my boundaries of my own work is I will often think about something I could tell that would be helpful to somebody else. Or if I see somebody else in my ministry that has an issue, I would like to volunteer my opinion. So they don't need my opinion, and I overstep boundaries sometimes. And I have to remember, no, the Lord's given me this. I need to stay focused on this. But it's calling myself back and identifying that, yeah, that could really be a busybody action or move right there if I took it.
Boy, good. Talking to Glynis Whitwer today. One more break here. When we come back, I want you to talk about the difference, make the distinction, if you would, between busy work and our best work, and what the soul rest piece looks like in the midst of all of that. Talking to Glynis Whitwer, title of her book, Doing Busy Better, Enjoying God's Gifts, plural here, of Work and Rest. Email if you want in on the drawing. Susie, that's Susie with two S's, S-U-S-I-E, Susie@myfaithradio.com, and we will be back in a minute.
No matter what I face, you're by my side. When you don't move the mountains, I'm needing you to move. When you don't part the waters, I wish I could walk.
Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to Glynis Whitwer today, having a great conversation about what it means to do busy better. In fact, the title is Doing Busy Better. That's her new book, Enjoying God's Gifts of Work and Rest. And in the book, you make a distinction between busy work and our best work. And this is something I feel like that takes regular attention. I mean, I think we can develop some instinctive habits and core beliefs that help us and give us momentum, but that wheel seems to pull to the ditch and to the rumble strips if we don't watch it. I don't know. What do you say?
Well, our best work, and by work, I don't just mean like employment. I mean, whatever it is the Lord has called us to do. Our best work usually involves more energy, more creativity than we think we have. We talked a little bit about people who maybe don't step out in faith, and I think it is hard sometimes. There's a lot of emotional challenges that we face. So when we get to this position where we've got something that's challenging, but we know it's good, and that could be anything. Some people, that could be adoption, or it could be writing a book. A lot of people I work with, people want to write a book, or it could be stepping out and risking your position, taking a different position at work. So whatever it is that really is our best work, it's something that's going to take the most creativity. It's usually hard. And instead of doing that, it's easier to opt for something else, something that's comfortable, something that's routine. So for me, one of my biggest busy work challenges is emails. I'm an editor. I sit at a computer all day. And a lot of times my best work is done at a computer if it's writing. But it's so much easier to answer emails. And it's also satisfying because I can, you know, if I have 15 emails, which of course, just for the record, I never have 15 emails, just 15 emails in my inbox. But if I did, and I got 5 of them done, I would feel great. So I have to always challenge myself, what do I really need to do today that's going to take the most energy from me, and then go about doing that first, or at least being smart and setting some boundaries over the busy work, because sometimes the busy work just has to be done, and so that it doesn't steal the best of us when it's time to do this better work.
Mm. Glynis, I'd love to know, as you look back to the time of where you felt like it was insanity, it was not sustainable, and then you started to just have a core belief change in your heart about not only what you do, but why you do it. How does life feel to you? How different is it? And tell me about the rest that you've enjoyed in that place.
Well, as I mentioned, I always had this sense that I should be honoring the Sabbath, but I didn't really know how to do it. And at the same time, I was always trying to manage my busyness with some kind of productivity trick or hack or time management approach, or if I just have the right planner, I'm gonna get this thing under control. And so a lot of things were happening concurrently as I'm learning these lessons that God is trying to teach me. But the thing of the Sabbath was just something the Lord kept bringing up and bringing up and bringing up. I don't know if you've ever had the Lord do that with you. Like, you know, you got to deal with this now. And so I finally decided, all right, I'm just going to not answer emails. Speaking of emails, I was one of the things I decided. I'm not going to answer emails on the Sabbath. I'm going to close my computer. I'm not even going to open it. I'm not going to answer emails on my computer or my phone. And that was hard. It was a really hard day for me. That was this part of this addiction. I think it was some trying to recover from that. But something happened in me. I realized I actually was enjoying the day off. I was enjoying the time not working, whereas I always thought I loved to work. Why would I ever not want to work? But the Lord was doing something supernatural in me. And part of it not only was just getting me to physically rest, but the Lord is taking me on this path to get me to a place of soul rest. And soul rest, as I have studied it and really tried to understand what was Jesus talking about in Matthew. Now, of course, I'm not looking at it. When he said, come to me all who, Matthew 11, I almost said Matthew 28, but Matthew 11, 28 and 30, come to me all who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. And then he said, and you will find rest for your souls. So he was really trying to get people, not a vacation, not a physical break from work, but a place to this place where we would truly rest in him. And what that means for me, as I've come to understand it, is I am trusting, really trusting. It's not just mouthing these words, but I'm trusting that my safety is in his hands. So before, I was always trying to manage my own, even my own physical safety or my children's safety. But I knew that I couldn't. This comes back to that when I mentioned about insecurity. I was afraid of flying for almost 5 years. It just got worse and worse and worse until I realized, and again, the Lord revealing this to me, I was placing my trust in the pilot to keep me safe. Or I would look at the weather. What was the weather conditions going to be like where I took off and landed? And if those felt good, if those looked good, then I would feel like I was safe. So I realized I had been putting my safety in something other than God, and that created anxiety. When I put my future, my opportunities in how well, like if I wanted to get another book contract, and I put my potential, my future opportunities in the hand of a publisher, well, that would always make me insecure. It would make me strive more. But if I realize, no, that's really in God's hand. I mean, and really believe it, Susie, there's such difference. And then I really believe my identity is in him. And when I attach all those beliefs and really truly trust that he is in control, something happens. It shifts. And I don't have to strive to make things happen anymore. It's not up to me. And my future is not in the hands of somebody else. It's truly in the hands of the Lord. And he has the potential, he has the power to do whatever he wants me to do. So long as I'm submitted to his will, not in a place of defiance, not in a place of hard-headedness or disbelief, then things are going to happen the way he wants them to. And there is something so freeing about that, because then we release that. We're free to say yes. We're free to say no. We're not driven by those things that used to drive me. It's truly a place, a spiritual, supernatural spiritual place of soul rest.
I couldn't agree with you more, and that same transformational thing has happened to me through the years, Glynis, and it is freedom. That's when he says, you know, my yoke is easy and my burden is light, because he does the heavy lifting. And suddenly then, people aren't the means to an end, and you don't have to posture, you don't have to position. Uh-uh. You really can seek first his kingdom. You can love people, put your hope in God. And it is, I think you're just traveling lighter, but rest comes easier. I just don't think you can even get good rest when you're carrying more than you're supposed to be, you know, because there's no laying it down. I mean, you're still carrying it even when you're trying to get some rest, you know?
Exactly. And if it all depends on you, that's a lot of weight to carry on any one person, whether it's your children's health, your children's safety, your children's future, your husband's wife's success. If you feel that that depends on you, it's a weight that we were never meant to carry.
Mm. Love this, too. You said, as grateful as I am for grace, my hope is to listen well before I raise my hand. Just got a couple minutes left, but I really love that. And I just thought, you know, we aren't going to get it right all the time, and there is grace and mercy for us. And we're grateful for that. But the hope is to grow in this and to listen to the Lord before we raise our hand. I'd love you just to say another word about that.
Well, I haven't always been one to give much grace because I didn't give myself any grace. And my expectations for myself were hard, and I would say harsh at times. And when you have those expectations on yourself, it's easy to pass those on to others. And I knew that I wasn't the person I wanted to be. I wanted to be an emotionally generous person. I wanted to be a woman who gave grace because she received it. And so there was a large part of this whole journey, which is complicated and has a lot of stops and starts and little side trails. I've learned something. And I think I'm still on this journey, just so you know, Susie. I don't think I've arrived. But where I had to learn this idea of giving myself grace and accepting God's grace, really, I think that's more, and I should say that correctly, really accepting God's grace for myself and then being able to give that to other people, that I hope, I pray I'm becoming the woman he wants me to be. I hope that I'm reflecting him better, and only through his power am I. But that's my hope and prayer, to be more submitted, to be a kinder, more loving person, and hopefully make a kingdom impact.
Boy, I really love the book, and I just love you. And as we're wrapping here, I'm thinking of that line from your book, and you said that there's a promise of an unhurried, productive life, and it calls my name. I want you to pray for that person right now, if you would, Glynis, listening today, who needed to hear that the promise of an unhurried yet productive life, I mean, imagine those two, unhurried yet productive, calls your name. Would you pray for that person today, Glynis?
Yes. Yes, Susie, I would. And Father, we know that there's someone listening right now whose heart is pounding, who knows that they have not walked in the way that they should, Lord, and perhaps they feel helpless to do anything else, Lord. And yet they hear your promise. They know, they hear the words of Jesus to come, all who are weary and burdened, and that this promise of rest is for each one of us. No matter how we got worried, no matter how we got burdened, you don't care. You offer this gift to each one of us. And for my sweet brother or sister who's feeling that overwhelmed, guilty, that just that sense of condemnation, Father, I pray that that would be released and that they would be relieved of that and that your truth and freedom would flood their heart today, Lord, and that your promise and your potential would be real to them. Lord, that you are the hope giver, and I ask this all in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Glynis, thank you for joining us today. What a great conversation.
Thank you, Susie. I loved it.
Talk to Glynis Whitworth today, and title again of her book is Doing Busy Better, Enjoying God's Gifts of Work and Rest. And if you want to be in on the drawing, just email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. Susie@myfaithradio.com, and don't forget your mailing address. What a great conversation. Well, you've been listening to Live the Promise. I'm Susie Larson. In just a bit, you'll find a podcast of today's program up on our website at myfaithradio.com. We're going to kind of continue this conversation. Next hour, we're going to talk about how to move from just making money to making a difference, finding that sweet spot, that place God has called you to. So don't go away. Another great hour is up ahead next. We'll be back in just a moment.